Thank you, Deanne, for that wonderful welcome. Remind me never to get you to introduce me ever again. I'm just kidding. Thank you for doing some very extensive research. There are some things there that weren't on the public record before today, so you've outed me. You've outed me. But congratulations to you on your new role. It's an amazing responsibility, and I know you'll serve it with distinction. But ladies and gentlemen, can I acknowledge all of you? CEDA is renowned for being such a strong thought leader. And it gives me a great pleasure to present today. I am someone who likes to dig into the detail of economic policy, and this is perhaps a crowd that might appreciate that. I'm trying not to be political in any of my comments, although I might digress from here or there. But I thought what I would do today is give you, a picture tells a thousand words, so give you a bit of a slide deck on a couple of things. Firstly, what we inherited when we came to government, how we've turned things around, where we are, and our vision for the future. And if nothing else, I hope this presents to you a factual account in summary of what we've achieved, especially in terms of our economy and budget position, because governments of all persuasions have very principled views on what they would like to achieve, but none of that is possible if you don't run a strong budget and have a strong economy. All your ideals in the world fall by the wayside if you don't actually have the resources to bring your philosophy into reality. And I think that's been the hallmark of our government, being able to deliver on our commitments because we have been able to turn the budget around and also deliver a strong economy. But I also want to say before I start the deck that we appreciate most strongly that government is a partnership and you need to work with business and you need to work with the community sector in order to achieve that turnaround. You cannot do it on your own. And that is one important lesson I've learned in public life, that it's through collaboration that you actually get things done. Does anyone know how to work the slide deck? Oh, here we go. Oh, no. Deanne, do you know how to do this? Oh, okay. Can someone just please help? Sorry. Russell, you have a go. I think there's something wrong with it. Oh, here we go. Thank you. Which one? Okay, great. Thank you. So what we inherited, a couple of serious concerns what we inherited. Firstly, expenses growth in our budget was growing faster than revenue growth. And everybody knows that's a recipe for disaster. You can't control the budget if the budget's out of control. So you always need to make sure your revenue growth outpaces your expenses growth. And that wasn't happening when we came to government. In fact, expenses were growing in excess of 7% and our revenues were growing much slower. And again, if you look at the right-hand side, you can see the budget balances we inherited. So in the preceding 4 years of coming to government, there were deficits and there'd been deficits projected in the forward estimates as well. We also inherited the weakest economy in Australia. So if you see the first graph, economic growth, New South Wales was the slowest. The rest of Australia was growing much faster. And in terms of jobs growth, and just remember the turnaround now that we've created 3.9% unemployment. When we came to government, jobs growth in New South Wales was the worst of all the states. And we were rated, as you see, New South Wales last in terms of relative economic performance against all the other states. Interestingly, New South Wales and Victoria have similarly diverse economies and you tend to think we'd be going at the same rate. So the fact that New South Wales was far worse than any other state demonstrates what we inherited. And regrettably for our consumers, for our citizens, this also meant that consumers were paying too much for government inefficiency. So if you looked at all of our state-owned corporations, all of the entities which provided services to customers, because of their inefficiency, customers were paying too much for their services, whether it was CTP green slips, whether it was water bills or electricity bills. They rose in terms of electricity in double-digit figures. How we turn things around. Now, this graph demonstrates what we inherited. You see the deficits on the left-hand side. And on the right-hand side, we've managed to convert what we inherited into surpluses. And this isn't something that happened by accident. It took a lot of difficult decisions. And I'll just run you through a few of the things we did to turn that position around. So firstly, we reduced back office waste. We stopped doing everything we didn't have to do. We used technology to be more efficient. We provided a certain operating environment for business and community, which meant increasing investment and growing. And we also recycled some of our assets, although that helped us on the capital side, less so on the recurrent side. we also introduced the Fiscal Responsibility Act, which actually legislated the fact that government expenses couldn't grow beyond five, you couldn't spend more than 5.6% on the previous year, which allowed us to maintain our control over the budget. And of course, in having managed to reduce our waste and reprioritise, we're also able to repay the debt we inherited. So the debt was projected to rise in the general government sector, was projected to rise to $19.5 billion, so nearly $20 billion. We have fully repaid that. In fact, we are negative net debt, so we're cash positive by about $11 billion in the general government sector. And I haven't put it on this sheet, but if you look at our total balance sheet, we have in excess of 100 billion funds under management. We're now in the top five largest fund managers in the nation because of that turnaround. Sorry if that's a show off, but I like saying that. And as I mentioned before, the Fiscal Responsibility Act we introduced, which makes sure that we keep expenses growth below long-term revenue growth. This is really important. No matter how well you're doing or how poorly you're doing, you have to live within your means. Just like managing a household budget, you cannot borrow more than what you can repay. And that goes doubly the same for government. And excitingly, we'll be fully funding our super liabilities by 2030, which is a massive achievement. And of course, in all this environment, we've maintained our AAA credit rating and maintained our healthy budget indicators all around. We're also very pleasingly the lowest have the lowest unemployment figures in Australia. We continuously on trend create more than half the nation's jobs in the last couple of years. And I nearly fell off my chair yesterday when the new results came in, because I thought would be around 4, but to crack the 4% barrier and have 3.9% unemployment was really exciting. And we've created 47,000 new jobs in the previous period. Most of those are full-time jobs being taken up by women, interestingly. That was a statistic coming through. And also in terms of youth unemployment, we now have the lowest in the nation. Now, there are pockets of challenge in that, because depending on the regions and where you're looking, but generally speaking, the figures are down everywhere. Pleasingly yesterday, if you notice that the unemployment rate for the rest of the nation is at 5.5, so we are considerably lower in New South Wales than the rest of the nation. And again, in terms of the CommSec state rankings, New South Wales is now first. From going to position of last, we're now first, which is extremely pleasing. Normally we do better, much better than Victoria, but you know, growth on growth on growth means we're about the same at the moment, but that's okay. And just a slight dig at my southern state. We're spending about twice what they are on infrastructure, but we're not borrowing for the money. But anyway, that's fine. We're actually using surplus to make that happen. Here we go. And this good segue into this graph. So where we are in terms of investing like never before, if you look at government infrastructure, and they're in real terms, so that's dollars for dollars, that's not on pro rata and it's not based on any other factor, that's just in real dollars. New South Wales is far exceeding any other jurisdiction, including the Commonwealth. Now, the Commonwealth has increased its spending in infrastructure by a lot, but we are investing around $90 billion over 4 years, and they're investing about $70 over a decade, just to show you what New South Wales is doing. We are investing twice the rate of Victoria. But again, Victoria is borrowing to fund their infrastructure and we're using surplus funds. But the exciting thing for me on the right-hand side is I began by talking about collaboration, and what really pleases me is the level of private business investment in New South Wales. That's shot through the roof. And these figures don't really tell the full story. In the previous year, we grew by 22% in terms of business investment. The rest of Australia was contracting at 3%. So whilst the rest of Australia was contracting, we were growing in double digits. Now it's a bit more normalised, but that blue graph is growth on growth on growth, if I can put that to you. And where we are in terms of the infrastructure boom, I wanted to show you more specifically what we're spending in various sectors. So in health, the middle graph is what we've done to date, and the high blue graph is what we're doing into the future. Now, with schools and skills, I've been very conservative and hard on myself on this graph because we haven't included skills. This is just schools. The Labor, or I should say the previous government's red graph included skills investment. I've taken that out. So what you see with the blue graphs there is just straight out investment in our schools. And of course, transport capex is off the charts in terms of what we're doing relative to the past and what we're going to do into the future. And I guess the point I want to make in this slide also is not just a comparison of what we inherited and what we're doing, but the fact that we now have a rhythm and the budget is in such a strong place, we have capacity now to increase what we've done at a faster pace. And this slide equally excites me because why do we do what we do? We do what we do as a government to improve the quality of life of our citizens, to take the pressure off families, to take the pressure off individuals, to increase people's choice on how they spend what they earn. And if you look at the way in which we've reduced costs which impact, which are a cause of state government, I'm incredibly proud of these graphs. So electricity inflation, or the cost of electricity, has gone down substantially in New South Wales. We now have the cheapest bills in the nation. We inherited the highest and we now have the lowest. In water, we inherited the second highest bills in the nation, and look at where we've driven down costs in water. We now have the cheapest water bills in the nation. And in CTP, or green slips, we've managed through our reforms to save on average every citizen about $200 in the city and about $100 in the bush off their green slip because of the massive reforms we've done, reforms that previously people deemed to be too difficult. Apologies to all the lawyers in the room, they weren't quite happy with that. In terms of our vision for the future, what our strong position means and what we've done to date means that currently we are in the process of building 5 extra metro rail projects. And when we say metro rail, the Northwest Rail Line, which we started some years ago, in May will open to the public, and for the first time we'll have turn-up-and-go metro rail services to Australia. It's the first metro driverless train system in Australia. We're in the process of building another 5 of those rail lines, 3 light rail lines, 7 motorways, building a brand new city around the second airport, which I'll talk about in more detail, starting a fast rail network in the next term. When I say fast rail, it means initially faster rail to reduce massive travel times between the regions and Sydney, but obviously looking towards introducing fast rail to our continent. We are looking forward to upgrading 100 new and upgraded hospitals and health facilities. We've already done about 100, so it's doubling our efforts over the next 4 years alone. And we're also looking forward to doubling our efforts in terms of school and school infrastructure. And it was really pleasing for me on the first day of school this year, we were able to open 17 brand new schools on term one. So 17 lots of school communities turned up to a brand new school or brand new upgraded school in this year alone. And our vision for the future also includes increasing the presence of our frontline staff. Obviously, when you're managing a balance sheet in government, the capital side is easier to manage than what we call the recurrent side. Your day-to-day costs and expenses are more difficult to manage than your capital outlay. And so what's really exciting for us is because we have been fiscally responsible and disciplined, we've actually been able to increase the number of frontline staff. And over the next 4 years, when you're building more hospitals and more schools and more police stations, you obviously need to increase the capacity of your staff to be able to service those centres. And I'm excited that over the next 4 years, we'll be employing an extra 5,000 nurses, 4,600 teachers, 1,500 police, and 30,000, or providing 36,000 extra weekly transport services, and you obviously need people to manage that system. And this is the largest boost to our frontline services in the state's history. This has never happened before on this scale. But it demonstrates our need to not just grow with the community, but be ahead of the curve to make sure we're planning for the future. And one of the mantras we gave ourselves when we came to government is putting our citizen or our customer at the heart of everything we do. Can I just ask if anyone's used anything at Service New South Wales in this room? Okay, great. I won't ask you to tell me if you think it's an improved service on the previous one, but I used to take a book when I renewed my car licence because it used to take so long. And now I hope you can either do it online or turn up and have it done in 5 or 6 minutes, and I hope you've experienced that level of customer service. But our Service New South Wales centres, which we're expanding throughout the state, are essentially a one-stop shop for our citizens. We now have more than 800 transactions you can have done at that one location. And when I say at that one location, if you're good at doing things online, you don't have to leave your house. But if you're someone who doesn't have a computer or doesn't know how to do things online, you can ring up or go in person. And we now have, as I said, consolidated more than 800 transactions. So imagine how efficient our back of office has become to facilitate that. And we're improving and increasing the number of things you can get done at these centres. And we also have done, because of our strong budget position, more than 40 cost of living programs through these Service New South Wales centres. So I say to our, I put a challenge out to everyone when I meet them, go and talk to someone or ring up someone, find out or tell them what you're paying for various state government charges, and I bet you can save in the area of about $500, but a lot of our people are saving, citizens are saving, you know, upward of $1,000. So depending on your circumstances, on average you're saving $500 but upward of $1,000 on just our cost of living measures across 40 different areas. And simple things like energy switch. So we're the first state in the nation that actually introduced a system to say we will ring all the retailers on your behalf to find out the best deal you can get, and then we'll tell you what the best deal is and we'll switch you for nothing. And you can save, on average, people are saving $400 when they're taking that up on that. The only issue is you have to give up your account and tell us what your deal is, and we'll be able to help you with that. Fuel check, and we've had tens of thousands of people actually use fuel check. Fuel check is, just to give you an example, a real-time app where you can see where you're travelling on a family holiday, work out the cheapest place to buy your petrol, and save dollars that way. So that's a community service we're providing through that centre. And only last week I was very pleased to announce that we announced 10 more Service New South Wales centres, so we're increasing the footprint. But we also introduced mobile centres because in rural and regional communities where people don't have enough population to sustain a whole centre, we're actually taking our office to them. Or if there's a community organisation that wants us to provide them with information or service their members, we're able to do that as well. And these are real quality of life issues, taking the pressure off and reducing cost of living. And of course, part of our vision for New South Wales is to make sure that the business community continues to thrive. We want New South Wales to continue to be a great place to invest, and so we are ensuring that we support businesses to do that. And how are we doing that? We're obviously cutting taxes for businesses where we can. So since we've been in government, we've abolished $4 billion worth of recurrent taxes, which business paid, small to medium-sized business paid. Obviously, the federal government has some levers as well, but the levers we have really impact small and medium-sized businesses. And we've reduced stamp duty charges, obviously payroll tax cuts, and other duties which business had to pay. And there's more for us to do. There's definitely more red tape we can get rid of, but I just wanted to let you know that's always top of mind for us. For us, it's the juggle. Do you obviously support the community in reducing their cost of living? Yes. Do you also support business by reducing the cost of operating in New South Wales? Yes to both. So we're finding the right balance. We're obviously tackling the cost of energy in terms of business as well as consumer households. We're making sure we're investing in training and skills because our biggest constraints to increasing our future infrastructure pipeline isn't the capital, which we've done, which we've got in the bank. It's actually making sure we've got the skills and the jobs to and for people to employ so that when we put something out to tender, we have sufficient depth in the market, given there's so many projects on, to make that happen. And that includes having sufficient labour and access to labour. And of course, we're also supporting a lot of economic game changers, such as the second Sydney Airport city. So whilst the federal government builds the airport, the state government builds the city and the roads and the infrastructure around that airport. And we're taking that very seriously, can I tell you. Part of our vision for the future is, of course, growing our regions, but in Greater Sydney, it's creating three cities. So where we are now is the Eastern City, Parramatta is the second city, and the third city, major city, will be the city around the airport. And already we have signed MOUs with leading firms locally and globally who are setting up shops in Western City around the new airport precinct. And what's really exciting there is when you're standing in Parramatta in the future, you will be facing west for the best jobs in robotics, space, engineering, agribusiness, freight. You won't be looking east, you'll be looking west. And that's really exciting. That's a vision that I'm really excited about. And to have, as I said, some really high calibre local players, but also global players. We've got some manufacturing companies and banks with trillion-dollar balance sheets wanting to set up shop there and create the jobs of the future. We'll also have Australia's first single-campus multi-university operating there. So four of our best universities have come together to operate from one campus. So you'll have the R&D, you'll have the population there to actually work with industry, and you'll have the freight, the airport there to get goods and services to and from markets. So that's really exciting. I could talk about that alone for now, but I won't. I'll keep going. And of course, our vision for the regions is also really exciting. We've ensured that $1 in $3 of our infrastructure spend goes to the regions. I talked to you before about the fact we've already upgraded or built 100 new hospitals. 64 of those are outside of Sydney. So 64 of those are in the regions. And you know that regions don't have scale, so the investment required is actually more substantial per capita. But we've made it work because we believe in growing our regions. I think there's so much opportunity for New South Wales to really not just contribute to further economic growth through the regions, but also lifestyle. People can live in one place and work in another if we provide that connectivity and also invest in the social infrastructure. And of course, if you look at the last picture, I'm very excited about developing a fast rail network in New South Wales. People say to me, oh, that's pie in the sky. Well, they said it was pie in the sky when we said we're going to build a metro, and they said it was pie in the sky when we're going to do all these other things. If we don't start now, it will never happen. If we want to have faster rail in New South Wales in the next 20 years, we have to start now. And I'm convinced we can start work to really start reducing travel times substantially in the next few years, in the short to medium term, and obviously in the longer term, look for that real fast-paced fast rail. And I've actually assigned an expert from the UK, who's the European expert in fast rail, Andrew McNaughton, to support government in giving us his perspective on how we can do this. And I want to finish perhaps by what is most important to me, because people say to me, what is your vision for the future? And my vision, if I can sum up from a philosophical perspective, is make sure that everybody in our state has the equality of opportunity. It shouldn't matter what your postcode is, what your background is, what your circumstances are. Every person, every family, every household should have the opportunity to make choices to lead a fulfilling life. And that will only happen if state government steps up and provides those basic services to ensure that every child has access to a great education, that every family has access to great healthcare, that the jobs are there where people can actually earn a living and build their futures. And that, to me, is the heart of a good government. It's putting the citizen at the centre of everything you do, because as all of us know, no matter what industry we work in, no matter what we do, it's not the balance sheet that matters, it's what that does, and that's really providing those services and infrastructure that improves quality of life. So I might just end it there before I take some questions. Thank you for your patience, everybody, and thank you for letting me indulge in some more detailed policy today. Thank you.